Hey there, AfterBuzzers. Welcome back. This is Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 16, Star-Crossed. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello. Welcome back after a whole week-long hiatus.
It was awful.
I missed you guys so much, but I'm glad to be back. Ooh, listen to this music. Lucretia, what is this again?
This is Under Your Spell from Once More Feeling, the Buffy music.
Ah. I like that you know the hand
movement. Yes, I literally have this memorized.
That's
dedication. I have
the
whole choreography and everything. It's great. More fun when I'm drunk.
So I am your host, Tari J. Miller, and I'm joined by a wonderful panel, same wonderful panel as usual, starting from my left, Stephanie Winger.
Hi, guys. Good to be back with you all. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and all over the internet at Stephanie Winger.
Lex Michael.
Hi, I am Lex Michael, and I am all over social media at The Lex Michael.
Joelle Monique.
Hey, guys. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique, and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
We're manning the chats. Lucretia Lyon.
Hey, guys. I'm Lucretia Lyon. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet since there is only one.
Excellent. And once again, I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me at Tari J, TauriJay. While we're here, make sure to like and subscribe, hit that thumbs up, all the cool things that are cool.
Yes.
Yes.
Speaking of cool things, guys, we have the King and Queen of Daxum in full glory.
Very beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
Damn. Also mean.
Yes, very nice, mean. As it turns out.
Yes, Susan is not the girl next door in this one.
Doo-doo-ts. So we got a little bit more interaction with them compared to last episode where they were just like, hey, by the way, our son's down there. Now we really got a feel of who they are, where their perspective on, like, Krypton and how they escaped and all that stuff.
Got some of their politics.
Oh, just a little bit of their politics.
Nice little family dinner where politics was discussed.
They want to make Daxum great again, guys.
Yeah. Everybody was uncomfortable.
Yep. I mean, come
just
on.
Just like us.
Daxum is a disaster. Everything about it, just, you know, Kryptonians come and they bring they don't bring their good people. Anyway.
You know what they needed? They needed a wall to keep those flying space rocks.
Yeah, it really would have helped. I think so.
We went there so fast, guys. So fast.
Yeah,
zero to 100 real quick.
Zero to 60. There we go. I mean, what did you guys think as a whole? Let's start with them as characters, like. What did you guys think of them, specifically Kevin Sorbo and
Terry Hatcher.
Don't make Lucretia get off the couch.
I know. Never mind. I'm not even going to explain in my brain. In my mind, I was like, Terry Pratchett, that's not right.
That's not.
Mm-hmm. It's not right. R.I.P. Anyways. So, we're getting real heavy. All right, so what did you guys think about these characters?
I was super excited for Terry Hatcher to be on the show. I feel like it's been a minute. The last thing I remember her on was Desperate Housewives. There may have been something else, but that's like the last big role I remember for her. So I was excited to have her back on TV. Of course, these characters turn out to not be so lovely. I think that's very predictable within the season, but I still thought their performances were great.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved that when they announced their presence to Earth, we got the warbly TV thing, which is something we've seen in a number of Superman stories, most recently maybe Man of Steel.
Yes.
But I liked that it was a nod to Superman stories that have come before. It was a lot of fun. And obviously, of course, Terry Hatcher, keeping her in the Superman family. She was, as we've brought up on the show before, Lois Lane on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, opposite Dean Cain, who plays Jeremiah. All of this stuff adds a meta level of joyfulness to the proceedings for me as I watch it.
And yeah. Two, plus there's all these other characters from Wisteria Lane, Desperate Housewives fame. We have Brenda Strong, our leader of Cadmus, as well as the Magic Boys on Legends of Tomorrow, Damian Dark and John Barman, Malcolm Merlyn were also on Wisteria Lane.
Ah. Yeah.
I like it. I like the ties back.
I like want to give super big props to the VFX team because that ship was so dope. It was like a battleship spaceship, which I think is something that we don't get to see. Like, usually spaceships are usually like really big, and then they don't have the naval like aspects of them. The shield ship does, but that's about it. And it's not really alien; it's from here, so that's kind of to be expected. But here we've got like cannons coming out of like portholes, and she's like, when they did the her relative size to the ship, she was so tiny. The ship was so big. And I want to live on that ship.
Do you?
So cool. Yes. Not with the people on it. I just want the ship, just the property, not the crew inside.
Do you want it to just be here in LA, or are you okay with space travel?
I would just like to live above the earth where it's nice and I don't necessarily have to deal with people. Like, I am a country of one in my ship that hovers just above, you know, different countries.
If you could avoid LA traffic, I'd be down.
I want those bubbles. Is what I want. The bubble that she was encased in for a minute there. Yeah. It's like, how am I going to get out of this bubble? It's not so much that I want one of my own, because I can see how that would be pretty inconvenient, but I want the ability to put others in those little bubbles from time to time. Not, you know, like to disrupt their lives in any meaningful way, more because I think it would be funny.
Ah, got it. All right. I mean, if you really want a bubble, you could always go to Brooklyn or San Francisco. Boom! Oh! Boom! Shots! Okay.
As a girl from the Bay Area, I don't find that a particularly funny joke.
I'm also from the Bay Area.
Yeah, I'm seeing.
And I find it hilarious.
Well, we can have this discussion later.
The drama, it's real. The tension, palpable.
But speaking of living in a bubble, I mean, it feels like Mon-El's parents have been living in kind of a bubble. They've been very single-mindedly looking for Mon-El, and now they want to try to gather up all the rest of the Daxamites and bring him back as the face of Daxam.
I liked your segue, although I do feel like living in a bubble is maybe less generous than we could be. In fairness, their whole planet has been destroyed, and probably every single person that they know is on that ship with them.
Yes.
And as far as we know, how many people did we see on the ship? Presumably there's a full crew, but I only really noticed, like,
maybe 20 people?
I really only keyed in on, like, the couple of hooded dudes at dinner. And I'm like, do those two hooded people do all of it?
No, it's like cycling hooded people. You just don't pay attention to who they are. You know?
I mean, it seems like they still have connects on the slave planet. Maybe they're still making deals. I have this feeling that they've been slowly, like, bringing people back from afar. But now that they've got their son back, they're like, okay, now we can return with our full force. We've started, you know, we got our slaves slowly coming back. We're slowly starting to rebuild our society.
Right.
Which makes sense. And I feel like maybe we missed a little bit of the love in this episode. These parents have been looking for their kid. Like, even though we don't appreciate, you know, maybe their value system, I honestly feel like they've really been looking for their son for a long time. And I don't know, I know he's in a strange relationship with his parents, so maybe that's not so. I just want them to love each other and be happy.
How, though, can they have time to dote on their newly rediscovered son when they're so busy being casually racist towards Kryptonians?
Yes.
Baked into the society. Like, I feel like it would be shocking for any parent who is racist to be like, oh, for real, though? But we collectively don't like these people, and I don't understand why this is happening. It's all a shock for the parents, and I almost feel bad for them. Almost.
Right. It's also, it's odd because she's being racist from the side of the oppressed. Like, she feels like the Kryptonians have always looked down upon them. And so it's more of like a bitterness that is stewed from, like, you know, institutions.
To build on this thought, I find it very interesting. One, that Kara didn't call the kettle black. Like, yes, Kara does think she's better than the Daxamites. The Daxamites certainly think they're better than the Kryptonians. Like, there is no uneven footing here. You guys both hate each other pretty equally.
Right.
Just how you would deal with that hate is different. You know, Kara would, I think, just choose to leave the Daxamites alone and never come across their path again. And the Daxamites would, you know, maybe destroy Kryptonians.
I guess, to be fair, right, like, you could argue that in a world where Krypton never exploded, taking Daxam with it, that the two of them may have been on more or less equal footing as far as who in their own mind has a bigger justification to look down on the other people.
Mm. Right.
But Krypton did blow up and destroy Daxam, and that was totally not on the Daxamites. That was totally on the Kryptonians. So that actually makes the Kryptonians look super bad in this situation.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I thought the flashback really kind of hit that point home. Mm-hmm. We got the flashback of him escaping, and you see the kind of how awful he was in that moment, but also how awful the attack was.
I have really weird thoughts on that. Okay, like, was it all, like, you're laying in bed with this girl, you're like, fend for yourself, peace. Yeah, that's kind of awful. But at some point, you know, self-preservation kicks in, and his ship can't carry more. It's not like, if he took off in, like a jet with, like, 60 seats, it was like, just me. Bye, everybody. Then I'd be like, you're a total jerk.
Right.
But there was clearly one seat available in there, and you die or you live. And so it's just like that whole scene. I was like, I feel like not that big of a jerk.
Well, yeah. Okay. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, yeah, let's face it. If we were all in Mon-El's shoes, I'd have been like, peace, guys. Like, sorry.
What
but
else am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I can't save the entire planet, but I just don't have the ability here.
Yeah.
I don't have the yellow sun to even give me powers to try to make a difference here. I've got one plane with one seat.
I think my issue came in if, like, he was sitting at a business meeting and he, like, ran out. I'd be like, okay, unfortunately, every man for himself, right? But it's the issue of, like, he's allegedly in some sort of relationship with this girl. You don't know, obviously, the details of that, but I think that's where I was like, oh, it just gave me that moment of pause. But I get where you're coming from, totally.
Yeah, well, I feel like the biggest issue isn't that he necessarily left that one girl in the bed, or that he stepped over corpses in order to escape the planet.
In his defense, when his guard was about to murder the one dude, he was totally like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and Mon-El's biggest, I guess, sin in this whole thing is how passive he is in this whole situation.
That's
as
fair.
The prince, it could have been his place to be like, no, we have to find a way to get people to safety or figure out a way to fix this or something to that effect. But instead, he chose to, as Kara said, take the easy way out and let his guard shove him into a ship and leave.
Hellfire raining down. Like, again, if there was, like, a tornado warning system going off, and it was, like, imminent in 5 minutes, tornado coming, then you have some time to think and, like, make up a plan and be like, let's get people to shelter. Hellfire rain. I just feel like the circumstances of that particular thing, like, I'm sure he was a general jerk and not a good person.
Right.
But in this one instance, I feel like that's not the greatest scene to show him being a jerk. I'm like, and that's, like, I just really don't know what else he could have done at that point in time to not be a jerk.
It's an exceptional circumstance, but yeah, I guess it conveys a lot that he doesn't protest at all when, for example, they leave the girl. Like, presumably,
yeah,
this girl that he just spent the night with, they're leaving to die.
Yes.
Like, she is dead now, and
oh,
he's just like, alright, let's go.
Right. He didn't even, like, grab her hand and she, like, died on the way or anything.
Right. He wasn't even like, no, seriously, I'm the prince, we should take her. He was just like, okay.
Well, like, that was kind of my issue. Like, he did nothing. He was just like, alright, like, it's been real, see you later. And I don't know. That bothered me.
But it does track, because letting this stuff essentially happen to him, letting these people make the decision for him that he's going to get out, get into this little pod, and fly away, is about the easiest path you could have taken in that situation if you're the prince and you're lucky enough to have an escape hatch like that.
Right.
Yeah, and Mrs. D in the chat brings up a thing, is the easy way was all he knew. And so that's sort of the thing, is to me, Mon-El's arc in this episode was probably his best one, is him realizing he doesn't want to do the easy way, you know? And that's the thing, is that's what he knew and that's what he did.
Yeah.
You can't fault him in that situation. It's about what he's doing now.
That scene is really great for showing the growth from then to now and who he is, which is why it kind of made the scene at the end a little confusing for me, because when Carr asks him, like, are you ever going to tell me the truth? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, you don't? Well, what else do you have to lie about at this point? Like,
see,
isn't it all out?
And I read that scene completely differently. I thought it was, like, him coming to a realization of, like, the person that he wants to become. Like, yes, he made the mistake, he lied to her, but now he's, like, ready to turn the page. So I don't know.
I see both readings of it, and I get... Tara, your face at the end where she's like, I can't
yeah,
get past this. I watched your face change to like a...
So, yeah, let's rewind a little bit. After Kara finds out that he is the Prince of Daxum, she feels hurt and betrayed that he lied to her, and she spends the whole time being like, how do you forgive someone who lied to you? Which is a good question. Like, when you're in a relationship, it's very hard to get
Absolutely.
Past things. So, like, I think that is a really interesting aspect that they kind of explored, especially having the parallel of Wynn and Lyra. My issue is that, like, he came to this realization, and then she still was unable to get over it. And it's something that it's her third time breaking up with him over something that's fairly small.
Okay, so that first part I agree with. I agree with the change in your facial expression on the grounds of this is the third time that they've broken up, essentially.
Right.
But I disagree that it's something small. I see the argument that what he was doing, in effect, was lying on a fundamental level about his identity, which is massive. And I get that that could be a difficult thing to get over, especially when you're told, like, it's entirely possible that I would have just let this go and I never would have told you. Now, hopefully, and I think she will probably come around, but right. I can totally understand it maybe taking, like, a week.
Yeah, and my biggest thing is, what was he supposed to do when every time they get in an argument, she brings up Daxamites and how horrible they are, how awful their royal family was? And that's sort of the thing, is this is what, you know, Mon-El is new to a lot of this, just as Kara is in relationships, being Cat Grant over here.
Right.
but yeah, that's the thing, is you throw that in his face every time, do you really think he was going to tell you the truth?
Yeah.
See, okay, someone in the chat reads a really good, Havoc6280 says Megan lied about her identity, and someone else earlier mentioned that Kara just left her people. Now, Kara was younger, but she's left in the exact same situation, essentially. Like, the planet's falling apart, I'm the last chance, I just gotta go and get off. I feel like it's really frustrating to me that Kara does do these. It seems very petty to me to hold these little things. And to your point, like, yes, he did lie about his identity, but because he was trying to become somebody else. He didn't want the receipt. Like, he lied about, essentially, his job.
Yeah.
He was born into a job. He didn't want it. He left, and he was trying to start anew. And ever since then, we've seen him make these really great leaps and strides to be a better person. And the fact that she couldn't take a second to put herself in his shoes and be like, why did you feel you had to lie to me in the first place? Like, the fact that she can never get to that second part of the conversation, it's
not soapy enough. it is not dripping with suds if the scene plays that way.
I also just think, though, that, like, he fundamentally allowed her to fall in love with a person he's not.
But that is who he is. I don't think it's good to to me, I don't ever want to be judged off the person I was, like, 5 or 10 years ago. Like, that person is not me anymore. I've evolved, and I've changed a lot, and I will hopefully change a lot and move on from, like, in the next 5 to 10 years. I think it's unfair to hold someone to a standard of a person they used to be.
Right, but to call a prince a profession is not a really a fair assumption. Like, my understanding is that a prince takes over, it's a lifestyle and many other things. You have security, you have all these things that change the way you live your life. So he grew up and, like, the person he was, yeah, I agree, like, the person you are today is not the person you were 5 years ago, but I think that to have a prince, to have that be your background, it's an important thing to note in a relationship.
Interesting.
Well, and it's also...
Oh. Oh, I was just going to say, Seb Russ in the chat brings up, I think that Mon-El also wished that he wasn't the prince. And two, as someone who also doesn't want to be judged by their parents or what they were born into, many of us can relate to this, because that's what he was born with. When he was given a choice to change, did he not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't get it. I totally get it. I'm not even saying I think he's not right. All I'm saying is I get why Kara maybe needs a minute.
I also understand why she needs a minute. And anything I could say would probably be an echo of everything that has been said. I also, from my own thoughts, like that the storyline with Mon-El was a reverse Aladdin.
Where yes. It was,
yeah.
That's all. That's, I have to bring Disney into every episode. but also, yes, I feel like to everyone's point, Mon-El was essentially like a guy who came into college and was like, this is who I'm going to be from now on. And then at some point he was like, she realized that he came from the hood and she didn't like it.
To play off of your Disney movies,
that's how it works.
I feel like there are so many Disney movies about a prince who, like, pretends. I'm thinking of, like, I think there's a movie with Julia Stiles that this is for sure from the 90s.
Of 10 Things I Hate About You?
No, it's like a movie where she plays a normal, like, college student, and then a prince comes to college and he pretends to not be a prince, and then they have an argument and they end up falling.
Foreign Supremacy.
Yes, it's got to be that.
Sorry, guys.
And the prince kills a dude with a magazine.
I've seen a lot of these movies, but... Chat, what are you? But I just think that, like, it's one of those things where... I don't know. I just have an issue with lying in a relationship, what, I guess, bottom line.
Seriously, though, wasn't it like The Prince and Me, something like that?
Yeah.
I have a vague memory of this poster.
I'm so glad that you...
No, she's sitting on the throne like this.
Yeah.
No. Standing over like, her like here. Yeah.
This is on my ceiling so I can look at it.
Totally.
Yeah. Is that what that movie's about?
Good to know.
Stephanie, to your point.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it was an active lie, or do you feel like it was a lie of omission? I feel like those two things have different weight.
Right, and I'm not saying that... I think there's a path of forgiveness, but I get why she would be upset in this case. I feel like the past breakups, that's a fair point, that they were a little bit ridiculous.
And the same to the person in the chat that brought up that Magan lied about her identity as well. That's true, and I would totally understand if somebody needed, like, a minute to go, all right, let's just breathe and reassess before we continue with this relationship. Let me actually move forward knowing who you are.
Right.
But that's not what Kara does.
No.
She does not say, I need a minute to think this through.
It's not sudsy enough, Joelle.
This is why I like Wynn so much. I love Wynn just being like, oh, well, she lied to protect someone. So it's not against me. And, like, I'm fighting for that chick. She'll lie to protect me, too. Like, that's awesome. I'm going to try to be with this girl. I'm trying to make it work. I was really hoping, like, Kara would listen to it. Wynn is such a good friend. He's just the best.
Yeah. He is. He's really great. You know what else is the best? You guys. You guys are literally the best. You come here every week. You listen to our show, you watch us do funny make-em-ups, and share our thoughts and feelings, and you share your thoughts and feelings in the chat, and also in the comments below on iTunes. You also share your comments below on YouTube, and we really appreciate it. And the best way for you guys to keep, the best thing for you, us to keep this going is if you keep doing that. You go on iTunes, you hit that 5 stars, and you go, you guys are doing a great job. You can say that verbatim. And if you go to on YouTube and hit the thumbs up,
yeah,
and you type below, this show is awesome, especially Tari because he's awesome. Mm-hmm. Verbatim, you can write that however you want.
Some combination of words. This is the best.
Having to do with awesome show, Tari, great. Something like that. And you could also mention the rest of
your
panelists.
Comment could just be hashtags.
Yeah.
Could just be hashtag awesome, hashtag show, hashtag Tari, hashtag great.
Yeah. But I don't think that would track as well. You might have to put it together, start a hashtag campaign. But why...
It's just that easy.
Yes, just that easy. But anyways...
So many good points in the chat. I love the chat. Can I just say I'm jealous of Lucretia's job now because she can spend all of her time with you guys?
Yeah, I just read their comments. I don't even listen to you guys.
I'm just peeking in on
as
this.
As you should.
And someone reminds us that Kara did not tell Cat Grant's son that she was Supergirl. I don't know why I'm being so salty
or
to Supergirl
tonight,
guys.
Or she didn't tell him about Mon-El either, but that's a different story.
I just have feel like I love Kara so much, and I think maybe that when I'm watching her and seeing her, that I see maybe a little bit of myself and my judginess, and I'm like, damn, I don't want to be that person. Kara, be better so that I can also be better.
Yes. And we do have iTunes reviews, in case. You
know, I would love to hear those iTunes reviews. I bet they love us more than Kara loves Mon-El.
The two of these are new since you asked for one, there is one that is literally I love Tari 5 stars. 7206S. Fancy name.
Oh man, that's great.
Tari just makes me laugh. When he went off on the Twitter's comments, Tyra Banks style, over the LinkedIn promo, and then had to apologize on the next podcast, I died laughing.
Yeah.
And then we have another one.
Oh, wait, Lucretia, they're requesting your sexy voice.
Oh yeah, sorry, guys. And two, it's like Phoebe sexy, like, sick. So, I love this after show. 5 stars. Wizard of Wonderland, 1987. So, I've been watching this after show on YouTube since season 1, and I would have to say that all of this DCCW AfterBuzz shows, and I watch all the shows and after shows, this is my ultimate fave. each host has something different that they bring to the table, and I find myself wanting to hear each person's commentary because they are so unique. Tori and Lex are my boys, and I love hearing their views and opinions, especially their comic book knowledge. And while Stephanie and Joelle may not be as comic book literate as the boys, their ability to critique scenes and plot lines from an analytical standpoint is superb. I find myself reviewing scenes in my head after hearing some of Stephanie's comments and thinking, oh yeah, that was, they did there. And Lucretia's laugh. See, they saved the best for last, guys. Hands down, best laugh on the show. Take that, YouTube comments. I watch all the DC shows on my app the day after they air, so I can't tune into the live feed, but I always look forward to finishing the actual episode so I can then listen to see what the AfterBuzz team has to say. As long as y'all keep making the show, I'll keep coming back for more. Ooh. Fantastic job.
Yeah. Nice.
That's awesome.
The best. That warms my heart. My heart was about 70-something degrees, and now it is upper 90s, probably.
That's a concerning increase over a very short period of time.
Yeah. But it is. It went from a cold heart to a normal heart, I think. I don't know how body temperature works. It doesn't matter. But speaking of hearts, Lyra Brooke Wynn's heart.
For like 2 seconds. God, I never believed it. The whole time I'm like, Lyra is not evil and she's not breaking up with Wynn because this is my favorite ship currently on TV.
Is it?
It really is. I love them as a couple so much. Mostly because I think I've seen Wynn just like, when characters pine for so long and then they get nothing for season after season, it breaks my heart for them. Like, I want to see like great, amazing Wynn like with no one. And now he's got this girl who's just like, so fun and like helping him break out of his shell. He's singing at his desk. Mm-hmm. He is so happy. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, they warm my heart. They make me feel good.
Yeah. Your heart's probably also at an upper 90 degrees.
We're feeling toasty in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've been waiting to see this relationship explored a little bit more because I agree. I love all of the business with the two of them that we've gotten, but it's largely been on the periphery. And she's been around long enough without us really having much of a storyline devoted to her that it was like, all right, well, when's this other shoe gonna drop? It's either she gonna be imperiled or she's secretly evil in some capacity. So I liked that they were able to trick us for a minute into thinking like, oh no, she's terrible, she's stealing the art for bad reasons, she's setting her boy up, no! But then it's actually for a reason that he is able to accept as valid.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really like this couple. I mean, I'm still, my favorite is Kara and Mon-El, always. But this is such a fun couple to explore and something different on the show. And I, too, want to see win one, for lack of a better.
Nice.
Yeah, like, I do. I want him happy, and so it bummed me out. I knew that they would eventually get back together. I felt like that was a pretty a way that the show was going to go, but I wasn't sure it would be in this episode, so I was happy to be such a short kind of fight.
Yeah,
I agree, because I like them as a couple, and I just love Wynn. And the more we get of Wynn having fun, and especially when I mentioned Cisco and how they'd be best buddies if they were in the same dimension, was just cute. But Kal-El Kent has a funny, disturbing comment that is Lyra's brother is really her secret lover, and I was like, that's so one life to live.
No!
I don't want that, but it was funny.
Let's not do that.
It would be great drama, though, but it would also make me really sad.
Do you guys
think... Seems like a dark twist for Supergirl.
Maybe. I mean, I think Wynn would still be into it.
But I think, like, on Supergirl, it's just not a direction we're necessarily going to see. What do you think?
I'm down. Let's do it.
I mean, yeah. Just for clarification, we're saying that he is not her brother, but a lover. Not he is both her brother and her lover.
Either way,
you know
so
what?
Barbara.
I trust him. Let's just see where this goes.
The one thing that concerns me about this Wynn Lyra storyline is that it kind of plateaus the relationship a little bit for now, because there's not much more we know about, like, there's not a lot of room for more drama, like, with some of the other couples, with, I'm blanking
Maggie
so hard.
And,
thank you, the
Alex?
Lesbians.
Yes.
They're still kind of, like, figuring out what it's like to be in a relationship with each other, and there's, like, you know, Alex is still struggling a little bit with her identity, and then, you know, Mon-El and Kara are just constantly in the drama, but for Wynn and Lyra, like, you know, we haven't really ever seen them have a fight. They kind of just have been cruising along real good. I'm curious to see what else is revealed about Lyra soon, to see if there's maybe some more conflict there. I'm concerned. Like, I want them to stay together.
But where... in terms of conflict, though, I feel like now that we've crossed the threshold of I'm framing you for art theft, where do we escalate it to from there? I murdered your dad. Like,
He'd like that. That would be so interesting. Because she's like, this was my gift to you. I killed your dad. He'll never, ever have to... You'll never have to worry about him again. And he's like, I'm conflicted about this.
They make a tableau.
But I actually want the opposite, in that now that we've had this moment where we find out that she's not who she said she was, it gives them a whole new chance to like relearn each other.
Yes.
And I like seeing successful relationships on TV. Like for those who watch Arrow in the Flash Arrow Flaroverse, Lila and Diggle's relationship is one of my favorites.
Took me a second. I was like, what successful relationship are you referring to on this program?
The only other successful relationship.
But you know why that relationship is successful is because Lyra is always busy and is never around. So when they're never in the same room, they can never have drama about how Barry changed the gender of their baby by messing with the time stream.
I mean, well, it also helps that Diggle can take all of his frustrations out on goons.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like seeing really successful, mature relationships that aren't like drama filled. Because like we have enough dramatic relationships on TV that people think like if your relationship isn't dramatic, then it's not a real relationship.
Hence the Harley Quinn Joker shipper is like, I have a relationship just like this. Like,
that's horrible.
Yeah.
I would encourage you to watch either
This Is Us or Jane the Virgin, which is really great. Examples of how you can be in a relationship and have small amounts of drama and then deal with it like an adult.
Right.
It's amazing.
I do, though. I like the idea, especially when these shows are all very much soap operas, and we see that in much of the relationship drama that comes up. I like the idea that if so many of these relationships are going to be so very sudsy, I like the idea that we have over here now, they can go back to being on the periphery a little bit, this really supportive, loving, healthy relationship where they just enjoy the heck out of each other. And we get this moment where we get to breathe with them amidst all the rest of this drama.
It would be nice to see a post-honeymoon phase for Wynn and Lyra. Like, you know, they're like all over each other now and they're like so in love and the passion is on fire, but you know, like eventually that just fades for every relationship. That's just normal. And like, how do they get over that and like start, you know,
settling into a life together?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I want to see them Netflix and chill newsies.
Yay!
I feel like this event thrust them past the honeymoon period. Because it's one thing to be like, oh man, this is just a person who wants to do the do with me. And it's another thing to actually have a conversation about, like, you've betrayed me, I care about you a lot. Like, they were like two words shy of dropping the L bomb.
I feel like once you forgive somebody for framing you for the theft of a Van Gogh, I feel like saying the words is almost redundant.
Right.
Well, I think it's also how the dust settles, right? So we see them like happy and in love at the end of the episode, but like there's still going to be hurdles to overcome from that. I don't think an incident like that, it's like, oh, we're all good, let's move on. Like, there's still things to overcome, and so I'm interested to see how the dust settles for them.
Okay. Cool. Well, so we're getting a little short on time. I know everyone still has lots of thoughts, and we still have to talk
really
about
disappointed.
How disappointed?
Well, I can't get the IVGA to connect, so I can't play your clip.
You gosh darn monster.
I mean, they could hear it if I play it, but they won't be able to see it.
You could describe it like a descriptive audio drama.
That'll be fun for our podcast, folks, because they can't see it anyway.
I think that'll be fine. Let me introduce it. So this is a news and gossip section. So one of our AfterBuzz hosts had a chance to sit down with Kyler Lee and her husband Nathan West. They recently did a song together. Nathan is the lead singer of East of Eli, and they were at the Troubadour this weekend, and one of the questions that was asked was if any of his music would ever be featured in Supergirl, and so she had the following to say.
Ooh. I'll tell you what, I have been trying to push for that, you know, and it's always a tricky thing. You know, there's a lot of like logistics that go into that kind of stuff, but absolutely 100%. I think every single song he does, and like, yeah, and all the cast wanted as well. So it's just, you kind of got to cross those, you know, barriers one at a time just to get through it. But absolutely, I think all of his songs fit on the show beautifully. Especially The Siege was one of the first ones. When it came out, when he said it, I was like, hun, this song is so fantastic for the show. So shameless plug, all of his songs should be on the show every episode.
Oh my gosh.
That's so sweet.
Credit that. And you can find the rest of the interview on Starry Mag. We will tweet out the link. She is super adorable. They are super adorable together. It's really heartwarming. And we had a chance to see the song. And it's really beautiful.
Well, so all you need to do, we've been comparing all season this alien bar that still has no name. We've been comparing it to Caritas on Angel.
Yes.
But if you make it a little less Caritas and a little more the Bronze from Buffy, all they got to do is throw in a stage and have a live band play in the background of some of these scenes. And you never have to justify it. You could just put them in there.
And Dingo's Ate My Baby better show up, because I swear that's the dimension they're from. And Casket Fan 1 has the best hashtag. Hashtag Netflix and Alien 6.
I was thinking Netflix and Gills. anyways. cool. All right. Well, again, we'll tweet out the link. It was great. Another piece of news and gossip that we got today.
Yeah, we did.
That Caramel is officially a thing in real life.
IRL.
Life imitating art.
Melissa and...
Hopefully not. Hopefully their real life relationship is much better than their...
He lied to her about being a prince of a small country. The small country Melissa Benoist is actually from destroyed when it exploded. Receiving no coverage whatsoever.
Yeah, they don't even have
fake news. Bios. Fake news. Sad.
We get a little bit of sweet super lovin' outside and on the show.
It's, to be fair, this should surprise nobody. The chemistry between the two of them has been so, dare I say, electric all season.
I don't get it.
You hurt me. It's all right. I'm like, good. I'm happy for them. Look at those crazy kids. Those crazy kids. I'm glad they worked it out.
I saw the best Instagram comment about this relationship this morning. They were out walking their dogs in Vancouver, where, of course, the show is filmed. And they were like, the paparazzi photos from this. Someone commented that it was like looking at a rom-com. And I was like, imagine that off camera. How cute is that?
So adorable.
So cute. All right. So I'm going to move us into predictions.
Yes.
We leave the episode with Music Meister getting himself captured on purpose so that he could put Supergirl in a trance, and he jumps over to the Flash's world.
I love that he was thoughtful enough to toss Wynn the portal device so that they could follow him onto the Flash tomorrow night.
He's not an animal. He's like, I'm Music Meister.
Yeah. He had for 2 seconds just to borrow it.
But I like the idea, maybe, and we'll see exactly what type of villain this Music Meister is, I think, tomorrow night. Yeah. But I like the idea that maybe he did that so they could follow him, because he's that convinced that he's going to get done what he needs to get done.
He needs an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me super excited for tomorrow night, but also I haven't seen Darren Criss on TV since Glee, and it was so exciting to have him back. I think like he was so charismatic on Glee, and in this one scene tonight, you saw that again.
Fun fact, he actually trained for 7 months to be able to do that thing with his eyes.
Oh. There you go.
Get the hell out of here, Lex. Hashtag.
Oh, man.
You can put it on his resume forever.
Jeez. What do you guys think is going to happen on tomorrow's episode of The Flash and going forward in the show?
We're going to hear some pretty great songs, and I'm really excited about it. First of all, props to the costuming team, because the looks were flawless at the end of this episode. I'm really excited to see how all out they kind of go with the costuming and the stuff. I always love hearing, what is his name? The guy that plays Joe.
Why? Jesse L. Martin.
Thank you. Yeah. Jesse L. Martin, every time he sings, brings, like, an angel gets its wings. Mm-hmm. And so it's really exciting that we're going to get to hear him sing tomorrow. I'm curious as to how the story will go. I'm thinking maybe we'll have, like, an invasion ending where it's like, and now that story is done, back to regular life, which I'm okay with. Like, the show does that really well.
I'll take any excuse for this musical episode to happen. Like, I really have no issue with, like, how, like, crazy and out of its world it seems. Like, I'm down. I'm super excited. It also is a big Glee reunion for Grant Gustin and everybody else. So
well, it also
awesome.
Looks like this musical fantasy that the Music Meister traps them in works on Nightmare on Elm Street rules. Where mm-hmm. it's a dream, but if you die in here, you die for real.
Yeah.
I'm like, I saw that one.
But also, how deadly knives. Is this musical world? Because I didn't think we were going to have any, like, I thought it was going to be I'm not sure how you get out of musical dream world.
Yeah.
And so now it's surprising to me that we need to worry about death at all, period. I have no idea what the storyline is going to be. I have no, like...
Well, it's definitely seemed like a different era. The way they were dressed and everything. Like, it seems like we're definitely going into, like 50s, 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It almost feels like almost like a noir. So there's a chance that at some point someone, having them, there's a line in the preview where he says, play the story out, follow the script. So there's a chance that it could ultimately be leading to one of their deaths. And that's how it happened.
Well, he specifically said they're in a movie musical as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So I like, too, and they reference they reference Funny Face at the top of the episode tonight, so I like that it's a throwback to, like, old, very old Hollywood. The set that they were in at the very end of this episode, it reminded me of Chicago, the musical Chicago.
Yes.
Looked very much of that era, and, like, I'm secretly a sucker for that type of thing, so I'm excited.
And we have some great comments and questions from the chat regarding this. Billie Jean Girl 24 says, fun fact, Darren, Chris, and Carlos, who plays Cisco, went to college together.
Adorable.
And then Haywood Wong actually asked, how does Stein figure in tomorrow? Well, I have read a little bit of spoilery news. Spoiler alert, if you don't want to be spoiled in the next 24 hours.
Spoiler alert.
That Stein and Joe actually play a gay couple. And this is where I hope Malcolm Merlyn comes in, because John Barman will be in the episode, which I'm excited about.
I've also heard, to kind of add on to your spoilers, that it's very based around Candace's character.
Iris.
Okay. Tomorrow night. So.
But I'm also wondering, too, why are Kara and Barry dreaming about Malcolm Merlyn, who they both barely know?
Well,
everybody else makes perfect sense to me. But I'm not complaining. That's great. Get Barrowman to sing in every episode of all of these shows every single week. But I'm wondering, like, did they even meet him? I think Flash met him for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in Flash.
Yeah, there is a chance that essentially Music Meister, everyone that we see trapped in this place, have all been put under a spell. So, like, at some point he meets the, like, legends, and he's like, ha-ha, you! Ha-ha, you! Ha-ha, you! Just because he knows who sings the best.
Well, like, the spinning eye thing, that effect makes you assume, go that direction. Yeah. At least for me, I was like, oh, he's putting them under some sort of spell.
Sure.
Yeah. That crosses dimensions and everything.
Right.
It's great. It's a real powerful spell.
And Rennie Grima, I hope I say that right, says they're just sad Kid Flash won't sing. His R&B voice is amazing, and he is just an amazing ballet dancer. I did not know that, and I've always kind of had a crush on Kenyon Longstail. Now I'm going to go find that. Thank you.
Ooh. Yeah,
I think he's adorable.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to start wrapping this baby up, guys. Thank you for joining us here on AfterBuzz TV on the Supergirl After Show. Again, make sure to like and subscribe and all the things to make sure you're here every week at 10 o'clock every Monday. Yep, that's when we do our show. I think that's correct.
You are correct. Yeah.
Every Monday here on AfterBuzz TV. And between that time, you can find us on social media. Like, where can they find you, Stephanie?
At Stephanie Wenger, all over the internet.
What about you, Lex Michael?
I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. And my friends, if you're a fan of DC on the CW on ABTV, I'm all over that entire block. We're here every Monday doing Supergirl, but you know that because you're here too. Tuesday nights, me and Lucretia talk about Legends of Tomorrow. And Wednesdays, me and Tari J, that guy right there who everybody loves so much, Tari J, 5 stars, talking about Arrow.
Yeah.
Come nerd out with us. We love you.
What about you, Joelle Monique?
Hey, guys. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com. Wednesdays on Books Circle Online, where we talk comic books. It's this kid and that girl and Frank, if you've seen him. It's good times. We love it. Wednesdays on AfterBuzz, doing the Magician's season finale, which it's so good, guys. I can't wait to talk about it. And then you're going to head over to blackgirlnerds.com and check my review of Power Rangers before you buy that ticket on Friday. You could also do that.
What about you, Lucretia Lyon?
Hey, guys, since I'm Lucretia Lyon, you can always find me at LucretiaLyon anywhere on the internet, since there is only one, and all those other places they said I am. And I'm doing Iron Fist on Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
Yeah, you are.
Not tomorrow, because I got to interview LL Cool J, but next week, you can catch me on that.
Nice.
Not tomorrow, because I got to talk to LL Cool J.
Yeah. I just had to slide that in there.
About me, I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me at Tari J. It's T-A-U-R-I-J-A-Y. Also on these other shows, including Flash, which wasn't mentioned, and Grimm, which wasn't mentioned, because nobody else on this show is on that show.
But they want me on the Flash tomorrow. Just
yes.
So you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But you'll be interviewing LL Cool J, so...
Just a Flash
interview
for
me.
We'll talk about it later.
All right. Join us next week here, same Supergirl time, same Supergirl channel.
I'll take it.
Yep.
Always.
Until then, have a super week.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Bye.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.